Thanks for joining me for Journey to Easter. This is our Holy Week series, exploring the significance and the meaning of each of the days of Holy Week in the Christian tradition. I'm Stephen Cat Perry, host of In Good Faith, and with me in studio today is Dr. Brandon Peterson. He's an assistant professor of religious studies at the University of Utah and works in the departments of world languages and culture and also philosophy. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, I'm a busy guy up there. There's a lot of exciting stuff happening with religious studies at the U. It's a small sort of program and it's growing, but lots of interest in talking about religion.
And you're also a parishioner at the beautiful Cathedral of the Madeleine in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate. I live close by there, and what a treasure. I mean, architecturally and the artwork in there, it's a beautiful
place. I was going to use that same word. It's a treasure both for the people who worship there and the community. I've gone to so many beautiful services there, organ concerts, all the rest. I learned something already just in looking over an outline you sent, which is we say Good Friday in English, which makes us think, what's good about Good Friday?
Right.
But that translates differently in other languages. Tell me about this.
Yeah. Across the Christian world, it's known by a number of different names. So Viernes Santo in Spanish, it's Holy or Sacred Friday. Mm. German, it's Karfreitag, which is something like Sorrowful Friday. In the Greek tradition, it's Great Friday. In the Scandinavian languages, it's something like Long Friday. So it goes by a number of different names.
I'm just wondering, when you grew up, do you remember first becoming aware and what that was like in Catholic services, and how were things different on that day when you went to services or just in the daily walk?
The services are a bit different on Good Friday. So it's the one day of the year that the Catholic Church doesn't have Mass. Mass typically involves the consecration of bread and wine as the sacrament of the Eucharist. So that's not done on Good Friday. There's no Eucharistic prayer. Typically, what ends up happening are pre-consecrated hosts from previous Masses are brought out. And so the faithful still receive, you know, the body and blood of Jesus. But yeah, there's no consecration. It's a very solemn sort of day. The procession often doesn't have music. You know, usually there's an entrance hymn while the clergy are coming in. And there's a lot of silence when priests would often, you know, in places where they would kneel or genuflect, there's full body prostrations where they're laying down with their, you know, face and chest down to the floor and just in a penitential sort of spirit that pervades the entire season of Lent, but Good Friday in particular. There are other things that are really unique about it as well. So one of them is this tradition of the veneration of the cross. So in the Catholic tradition, there's a rich usage of relics and iconography, and seeing these images are something that can put you in touch with that. But also relics. So there's a tradition of pieces of the true cross, of, you know, tiny fragments of wood that are treated anyway as if they go back to the cross that Jesus died on. And so whether a particular parish has one of these fragments or not, there will be some representation of the cross that's carried down the central aisle of the nave. It's a deacon that's usually carrying it, and he'll carry this cross. And again, it's a very slow, silent sort of procession, but then stop and just proclaim in chanting, "Behold the wood of the cross on which is hung our salvation. O come, let us adore." The Latin is Venite Adoremus, which you might know from Christmas hymns.
The Christmas
But he does this and stops, and then sort of modulates it up a little bit. And it says, behold the wood of the cross on which is hung our salvation. Come, let us adore. And then he does this a third time, and eventually the cross is situated in the front of the church before the altar there. The congregation then comes out to venerate the cross, and so people come up and either genuflect before it, or maybe have just a simple, you know, touch of your hand on it. Or one traditional way to do this that's particularly moving is to kiss it. So at the cathedral, they have a fragment of the true cross that's positioned behind glass that's right there in the center of a much larger cross. So the congregation comes up and embraces the cross, which again brings us back to this earlier question, like, why embrace the cross? You know, it's a torture instrument. It's an instrument by which the Romans tried to intimidate people.
Yeah.
It was meant to horrify, basically terrorize a community into subservience, right? You don't challenge the Roman Empire. And if anybody goes around claiming to be a Messiah, you know, something that might challenge the authority of Rome, you make an example of them, and they hang a cross by a road where people will see, and it's a giant warning sign. Watch out what will happen to you.
Yeah. Well, and that's just a visceral response of fear you would have at that kind of suffering.
Absolutely. So why go up and venerate the cross, this awful?
It's something beautiful that is communal. It happens in the church in a service, But there's a very individual moment there.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, it's different in a number of ways. But yeah, that somber feeling goes back to your question. Why is this good? Right? I mean, this is a day that commemorates Jesus' suffering and death, which in many obvious ways is not good at all. Jesus' crucifixion was, you know, seen by his disciples as absolutely disastrous. At his arrest, most of his disciples end up abandoning him. They flee. This is the gospel narrative say, you know, a few people hung around the margins. Peter is denying Jesus. They're running for their lives. Eventually, the Gospel of John has the setting where eventually the risen Jesus appears. They're hiding for their lives. They're behind locked doors. This was seen as a disastrous, calamitous event. And even St. Paul, in his first letter to the Corinthians, talks about Jesus's cross as a scandal to the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks. There's a lot that's obviously bad about this. I mean, the cruel torture and death of anyone, let alone the sinless Son of God, is something that's awful. It's a desecration in many respects. But at the same time, Paul then turns around and says, but we proclaim Christ crucified, the power and wisdom of God. So even early on, Christians saw something good happening here. And so there are images that show up in the Bible and then in the theological tradition that follows this, trying to make more sense, some positive theological sense out of these Gospels.
Just recently, Wednesday was Ash Wednesday, the beginning of the Lenten season, which is leading up to Holy Week and Easter. For those who are in traditions where Lent is not observed, can you say something about that?
Lent is the season leading up to ultimately the highest, most sacred holy day in the Christian tradition, the resurrection of Jesus, so Easter. It's a season that corresponds with Jesus' own 40 days in the desert before he undertakes his ministry. So it's a time of fasting, of prayer, of almsgiving, of penitence is the big watchword. So what are ways that you can reform your own life? There's a lot of introspection.
It seems that those extra days, those 40 days of attention and the Holy Week awareness of what was going on, it just seems like a way to draw closer to, in some ways, the humanity of Jesus, what he's experiencing, the human part of him. And it seems like that would make the Easter celebration all the more joyous.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the Catholic doctrinal framework, Jesus is one person with two natures. Jesus is fully human as well as fully divine. I think both of those aspects are really important to keep in mind when trying to grapple with and understand and make sense of Good Friday as well as Easter, that there's real genuine human suffering there, but also real genuine human transformation, right? The resurrection stories that we see in the Gospels tell remarkable stories of Jesus transformed. His disciples don't recognize him at first. He lights a sort of fire within them. But Paul says he's the first fruits of things to come. There's a transformation of humanity that Jesus inaugurates, you know, as a human. That's a really important part of appreciating what's going on during these holy days.
Brandon, wonder if I could ask, are there things that you stop to think about or that you do for a Good Friday, not necessarily as a congregation?
First of all, I'd emphasize that for our family, for a lot of Catholics, there's a big emphasis on the communal. So a lot of what we do for these holy days is coming together for the regular liturgies, for additional services. There's a beautiful choral meditation on Good Friday that the Cathedral of the Madeleine has. The choristers at their choir school, where my kids attend, sing at 3 p.m. on Good Friday, which is traditionally when Jesus dies. And so I feel like I'm living at the cathedral, you know, during Holy Week. So yeah, there's a really strong communal dimension. And even in the wider Catholic tradition, so I grew up in Iowa in the Midwest, it's the land of fish fries. And, you know, so typically during Lent, Catholics are obligated not to consume meat on Fridays, so abstain from meat. And so fish doesn't count in the Catholic tradition as meat. So people often come together for fish fries in parishes where you get together and you eat fried fish and there's potluck sort of stuff.
Growing up in Bloomington, Indiana, I knew every Friday it was fish sticks at lunch in grade school.
That's right.
Which luckily I happen to like, but I love knowing the significance there.
But yeah, the individual aspect, I mean, I think is something important too. I have some of my own traditions. There's a reading from one of my favorite theologians, Karl Rahner, a German Catholic theologian who meditates on some of these liturgical services. That's where I think the real power comes, is he's reflecting on what it means as you're going up and processing to that cross and remembering this. So
let's have you read that.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So I guess just to situate this a little bit, so he's talking to two different moments here. On the one hand, he's talking about this liturgical veneration of the cross that's happening. And so he starts it off with this proclamation of, "Behold the wood of the cross on which is hung our salvation." So that's the one moment. But on the other, he's asking those who are reading this or hearing this to think of themselves in that position on the outskirts of Jerusalem, going on this road where there's this cross on which is hung Jesus. And how are you going to comport yourself as you're processing past? What's your demeanor as you're approaching the cross? You know, like, there are lots of people that walked by the cross. Remember, Jesus's disciples, most of them abandoned him. Others are mocking. So he says, are you one of those who just shuffles by, who pretends not to see? You know, I don't want to look at that. What a horrifying thing. I'm just going to get on with my day. I have things to do. Or are you one of the people that mocks him, that says, oh, where is God now? Or are you one of the few, the beloved disciple, the Virgin Mary, who's standing vigil at the cross there? And so he's asking you to think about this as you're going forward. But the meditation sort of culminates as he gets to the cross and the site at which, the place during the liturgy where you would venerate this. And it's just a beautiful passage. I'll read this here. This is from a volume called The Great Church Here that contains some of Rahner's homilies and meditations. He says, do I kneel thus below the cross for the 3 hours of my life until everything is also fulfilled in me and through me? Am I one with the crucified? My soul thirsts for God, my Savior. I want to rise up and I want to see him who has drunk the most bitter cup of this world. I want to kiss his bloody feet, the feet that pursued me even into the most monstrous inextricability of my sins. I want to see the pierced side of him who has locked me in his heart and who therefore took me with him when he went home, passing over from this world through death to the Father, so that I too am now there where only God can be. I want to see the wood of the cross on which the salvation of the world, my salvation, hung. Come, let us adore him. Powerful words. Yes. As he's meditating on this crucified figure whose side is opened up and who suffered in such a great way for, you know, pro nobis is the Latin term, or hyper haemon in the Greek, for us, right? Mm. There's a for us dimension. And I think that gets back to this question of why it's Good Friday. There's a great love with which Jesus suffered, and it's a love that's about proximity. So we've talked about the human dimension of Jesus. So I think the divine dimension of Jesus is really important here too, because there's this idea in the Catholic tradition of God reaching out to us. So Rahner's asking, what's our demeanor as we approach the cross? He says, God's demeanor is clear. God reaches out his arms to a rebellious people over and over and over again.
Right.
And there's that persistent love on the side of God. And so that persistence in closeness, to be close to us, that's one of the things that this, you know, in terms of personal meditations, I try to read this every Good Friday, because it reminds me of that persistent love, that God is reaching out. God's presence is there as well, which is a promise to people, so many people suffering today in the brokenness of the world, so that God is in their midst, even if that means suffering, even if that means death.
But if God can't reach us in our suffering, why do we have God?
Right.
I mean, in our necessity is when we do reach out, and to know that the extremes that Jesus was put to and experienced is, I have loved being taught by you about other meanings, that good is Great Friday. It's Holy Friday. That gives me a nice frame of reference to prepare myself. Really grateful to Dr. Brandon Peterson for sharing his thoughts on Good Friday. And you can learn about each of the days of Holy Week in the Christian tradition worldwide with our Journey to Easter series. And I hope you'll join us in person on Palm Sunday, April 13th of this year, 2025, at the Marriott Center on the BYU campus for Journey to Easter, which will be a concert of beautiful music tying in with each of the days. And then we will hear presentations and reflections, including one from Dr. Peterson, about each of those days. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or watch this interview on our YouTube channel. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio.